dangerous. Beware, aware it's dangerous. There's gonna be one of us in a triple zone, because we're the pirate Optimus. To the west, to the east, gonna find my way and say the way all the way to one piece. Hello and welcome back to Piecemeal. This is a One Piece book club podcast. I'm your Captain Tyler, and I just got a hangnail. My finger's bleeding.
Oops. Oh, no.
My Nakama joining me on this week's episode are Matt.
Hi, I ate the Matt fruit.
Jason.
Hello.
Melissa.
Hello.
And Dave.
This is an unlucky day. For Tyler, apparently.
Apparently.
Do we need to, like, pause and, like, ring down Tony to get you a Spider-Man Band-Aid?
No, we're good.
Do you need a nap?
Are you just going to be bleeding to death over the course of the whole episode?
Yeah, I bleed for my art.
Yeah.
Do you need a blood nap?
I'll take one after we're done.
Okay.
Fill right back up again.
Top it off. Top it off.
It seems to have stopped for now. I think we're safe.
Okay.
Every week on this show, other than bleed, we read and discuss one volume of the famously ongoing manga One Piece.
You could say we bleed One Piece.
Indeed.
Famously ongoing postmodernist work, One Piece, as I recently determined.
This week we'll be reading volume 26, which is titled Adventure on Kami's Island.
You didn't tell me this was a Dragon Ball Z crossover.
Now, Jason, you know that Kami's a word. And not a name.
That's, yeah, that's true.
And you sometimes also know both. That the Dragon Ball Z crossover comes later.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Toriko doesn't even exist yet.
Wait, you're saying words, and I don't like that you're saying them.
What?
Sorry.
This is
who?
Just a perpetual... Okay, now, Jay, hang on. The way that you feel when Tyler does things like this and lays out these terrifying, baffling X marks, imagine that's how I feel every time you make a pun. Understand, like, empathize with me in this moment.
Oh, I get it now.
There's always a bigger fish.
You see what kind of, like, monstrous criminal you are now?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to stop, but I do see where you're coming from.
I know.
Neither am I.
Yeah.
All right, so we've learned nothing. Let's continue.
Let's learn something. I have a question for everybody that is tangentially related to the events of this week's volume.
I love questions.
What is the most dreamlike location you've ever gone to?
Dreamy.
I have been...
Dreaming.
I've been...
Somebody had to do it.
Scuba diving in Hawaii.
Ooh.
And being in a, you know, surrounded by all of this life in a floating type situation. It was really neat. And, like, being a few... feet away from a sea turtle and just being like, hey bud, what's up?
Hey, there you are.
Yeah. And then also there's like the existential terror of like, here's the drop off. You cannot see
God,
where this ends.
Hate that.
Let's go back to the shallow part.
Here's where you no longer belong.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not Melissa's space.
No.
This is invite only.
I'm going back to the turtle.
This is not the East Blue. in Columbus, Ohio, there is erected 2019, I think, was this art exhibit that is still around today called Otherworld. And it's very fascinating because it's kind of like an indoor play place combined with like abstract installation art and a lot of like so it's got a lot of like weird sci-fi, psychedelically decorated, like, rooms with secret passages that connect to all these other rooms, with little switches that make cool noises, and, like, bunches of screens with, like, cool symbols and eyeballs and stuff, and it's meant to be just, like, art project, psychedelic, surreal, fun. It's very, there are a lot of, and I went with Theo specifically, so I wish he was here to relay some of my experiences, because we had a wonderful time.
That sounds
and
really
cool. It has, like, so many, like, different crazy, it's very overstimulating, though, if you rush through it and don't take it, and rush from room to room, because it's like, you know, all these different sounds and sights, and in a lot of cases, textures, because there's, like, you know, fur on the floor climbing up to the wall that turns into this sort of bubbly, corally thing. You know what I mean? And it's just a lot of fun. And my favorite, one of my favorite rooms in it was like this sort of like spooky, it looked like a chapel, like the inside of a chapel as if interpreted by Bendy and the Ink Machine. You know, like old-timey cartoon, and you hear ragtime music.
Rubber hose.
And at the front of the chapel is a coffin, and with the lid open. And when you slam, and there's like, you know, old-timey Bugs Bunny ragtime music playing, and you slam the coffin, and the sky outside the church goes gray, and all the flowers wilt in the room. Because the flowers are like these sort of inflatable, wacky, inflatable arm flailing tube man technology, but in flower shape, and shutting the coffin shuts off the fans powering them. So they just like slow, they're these big cartoon flowers that just slowly droop, like, oh.
Lord.
And then the music all stops, and then you open up the coffin again, and the music kicks back in. The flowers are like, hey! So it's a lot of fun, and it rewards you for, like, playing and fooling around with stuff. You know what I mean?
I'm not much of a traveler, so I don't really go many places. But and my answer is probably not gonna fall under you guys' description of dreamlike. But the most dreamlike place I've ever been is when NXT, the sub brand of WWE. Was doing their first world tour, and they came to my hometown, and because it was the first one, the tickets were insanely cheap, to the point where I was able to get basically ringside, and the people on the card, where this is really gonna mean anything to people who are already into wrestling, but the people who are in the card were Shinsuke Nakamura, Finn Balor, Baron Corbin, and Samoa Joe, and a couple more that don't actually matter, but
mostly a star-studded lineup.
Those four alone, yeah, for the price of that ticket, for me being right there in front of the ring, being able to like feel in my chest when these men hit the mat, I could feel the like the miasma from the body heat, you know, that was that close. That's probably the most dreamlike experience I've had, because I don't think I'll ever get anything close to that ever again from a live show.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything for this one. I like Matt, I don't travel very much, and I think this is just kind of not the way I process the world.
Well, you already live in the most dreamlike place.
Do I?
New Jersey.
Oh, okay. I actually like New Jersey jokes, but that one didn't.
Wow, tough crowd.
Look, New Jersey gets made fun of so much, we develop very high standards for people making fun of us.
That's so fair. Mm-hmm. I'll bring the heat next time.
Yeah. I feel like going to a diner at 2 o'clock in the morning is a fairly dreamlike state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how often you do that, but...
You know what? Actually, you just made me think of a way better answer. It was a blizzard that hit us a few years ago, and I had no groceries, and the grocery store was close enough that I didn't have to risk driving in the snow. I could just walk. I just bundled up and started hiking in the snow, and I obviously live in a state that is not prepared for extreme winter environments, much like most of the folks in this chat, but I tell you, there was not a single soul, like, because it was after sundown, and I came to the closest I've ever feeling to walking through a post-apocalyptic world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because you could see, like, the remnants of people traveling, but not a single soul.
Ooh,
that was pretty spooky.
During our... No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it also... was actually one of the inspirations for me setting DSA Raya in a winter-based environment.
Okay.
During the Atlanta snowpocalypse several years ago.
I think it was the same one.
Was involved walking across a bridge at 9 o'clock at night that, you know, I've never walked over before because it's like a street.
Because you usually drive it on a car.
Yeah, it's not a pedestrian street. But like walking across this road and it just being silent.
And like surreal.
And no signs, like perfect snow, no car tracks, like just empty and silent. And it's just weird.
Spooky.
My answer is pretty similar, which is when I went to the first PodCon with What the Folklore a number of years ago now. We had to fly out to Seattle for it in December, and our plane decided to land in Portland, Oregon, and then said, "You figure it out from here."
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, dear.
We can go no further.
Oh, dear.
And so what we did was the three of us met a nice gentleman. I believe his name was Noah, which was kind of ironic now, on our flight. And the four of us split the fee for a rental car together. And he drove us all the way to Seattle from Portland, Oregon at like midnight.
Wow.
And it was just like, it was just Oregon covered in fog.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night. Just dead silent. It was very strange and not unlike the sights that the Straw Hats see at the beginning of this volume.
God.
You lived out an indie movie.
Yeah, basically.
How long a drive is that?
I forget how long it took us. It was a few hours, like two to four in that range.
Yeah.
How about we get started on this volume of One Piece?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh boy.
I get
we
it.
Have.
I'll start with the author's note. This week, Oda writes, "Bzzz, 3 p.m. I turn off my alarm clock. I open the curtains, make coffee, head for my desk. I put my coffee mug in its usual place, open my idea book, sharpen my pencil, slowly lean back. Zzz. Falling back to sleep is bliss. Yay! Parentheses, get to work."
Does this man really start his day at 3 p.m.?
He has an interesting sleep schedule from what I've heard.
What a dream. Oh,
Tyler, can you explain to me, maybe there is an explanation, can you explain to me the art that goes with this? Okay.
Sure can't.
Okay.
You want to describe it at least?
Nope.
I'm gonna drop it in the
Which volume is this? Yeah, please.
In the chat.
If anybody wants to take a run at this, feel free.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult to describe. I think I can.
Okay. What I'm seeing is maybe this is a photograph of Oda or of some middle-aged man. Who is scribbled over in such a way so that his hair is now like a bangs, ponytail, like Japanese schoolgirl kind of situation.
Yeah, it looks like pigtails.
Pigtails.
She's wearing
braided,
the sailor.
Yeah, braided pigtails.
Yeah, and she's got the sailor thing, cloth at the top, the kerchief sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the eyes are drawn over with intense looking eyes and
just a big old toothy grin.
Big toothy grin and a beauty mark.
Would you call it a beauty mark or a mole?
I would call it a beauty mark.
What's the difference?
It's about your perspective, yeah.
So the difference is whether or not you own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My phone is fucking blowing up right now. I don't know what's going on.
Is the McRib back?
It's time.
Oh my god.
Shit. Podcast over. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Get in the car.
I've never had one. I've never had a McRib. I've never had a Shamrock Shake.
Okay, that I won't forget.
I can't think of any McDonald's items I get excited for.
I get excited for the Shamrock Shake, and my stomach gets whatever the opposite of excited is. Excited and depressed. Depressed? Yeah.
I do get excited every time Taco Bell has a new item, even though it's always the same item, just repackaged.
I mean, they only have so many ingredients. Mm-hmm. There's only so many elements.
Yeah, until they added potatoes to the mix.
Oh my god, it was like splitting the fucking atom.
Tyler, you took too long. This is a fast food podcast now.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. I have final say. None of this will air.
Shit.
No.
In the last volume, when the log pose suddenly points straight up, Nico Robin relates the legend of an island in the sky, and Luffy becomes determined to go there. They sail to Jaya and seek out a dreamer named Mont Blanc Cricket, who tells them of a mysterious ocean current that can carry a ship up to the sky. With the help of the Monkey Mountain allied force, they make preparations, but when Cricket's gold is stolen, Luffy goes to get it back, and in the process, settles the score with Bellamy the Hyena.
He sure does.
Running late, the Straw Hat Pirates set sail for the knock-up stream, but Marshal D. Teach, the leader of the Blackbeard Pirates, who wants to become one of the seven warlords of the sea, is waiting for them. Just as Teach issues his challenge, the knock-up stream hurls the Going Merry skyward. What adventure awaits our heroes in the mysterious land of Skypiea?
Good question.
I hope there's some sky up there.
I hope there's some sky in the sky.
I can tell you if you want.
Yeah?
Yeah, you want me to just tell you how it is?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does that inherit... Oh, go on.
No, I wasn't expecting you to call my bluff.
Devastated.
I'm a fucking pirate. We're playing chicken on the high sea.
I would otherwise lie to
you.
You
gotta be willing to risk your life, Matt.
I would have otherwise lied to you, but there's no way you could know if I was or not.
Exactly.
We start our new cover story.
Oh boy.
Is that what you want to call this? A story?
It eventually becomes a story, and an important one, but for now it's mostly just
it
Oda.
Yeah. Of course it does.
It's mostly just Oda drawing whatever he wants.
Just being the yuckiest man.
I think that also just describes One Piece as a whole. Tyler.
Yeah, yeah. That's it in a microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It eventually becomes a story.
But mostly it's just him drawing whatever he wants. We begin Wapol's omnivorous rampage, and the first three entries are just Wapol eating different things and then transmutating into them.
It reads like a children's book.
Yeah.
I have a problem.
Yes.
I eat lamps.
Yeah. The lamps is the worst one by fucking far.
They are remarkable designs, though.
First
like, really
off,
intricate.
There's a bear in the background that does not want to be part of this.
No.
It's too bright.
Yeah, none of these animals want to be awake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or alive.
But
in the vicinity of this happening.
Not anymore.
No.
The treatment of this poor White Walkie cape. This poor thing.
Yep.
I have never forgiven this man.
Even disrespected in death.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Yeah, so the first three transformations are, I eat trees. Mm-hmm. Okay, that a little weird, but normal. Normal-ish.
I was about to say, is it?
It's about the tamest we're gonna get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we get lamps, which
Jason,
is...
Jason, when you say that drawing is normal-ish, I know that One Piece has finally defeated you. Yes, that you have succumbed to what is normal.
Right.
That these designs don't even, like... don't even cross your mind anymore.
The closest to vanilla at this point.
Yeah.
The lamp. I eat lamps is the most horrifying creature I have ever fucking seen.
I gotta disagree with you though.
So he's got like a kerosene lamp face,
yeah.
Where the bottom portion under like the candle is resting on his tongue. His face, his jaws are part of like the bottom half of the kerosene lamp holder thing.
He looks like he should be in Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
His eyes look like they crave death.
A lot of this looks like Pee-wee's Playhouse, honestly.
He looks like fucking horrified by what he has become. And then the third one is benches, where he's just a public nuisance.
That's the worst.
That's pretty bad.
He's got his fucking tongue out.
Yeah.
It
insinuates that people were sitting on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody fell for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's got mimic vibes to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that fucking like ancient Mabibimbam bit where it was like, what if your worst ex turned into a bench?
You had to sit on them.
Oh my god.
He begins devouring the whole town and then is captured by the Marines. And never once before in this manga have I rooted for the Marines, but now I find myself doing
it. I was about to say, this is why this is why Smoker joined the Marines, for this specific reason, to deal with this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the first time I would describe Wapol is making a good face. This giant fucking eyes, and it's this incredulous smile, just like,
I mean, it's
pure confusion.
It's kind of a callback to when the snowbirds popped out of the can.
Yeah,
you know what?
Very
it's
very like, what's happening?
Meanwhile, we check in with Dalton, who has become a duly elected king of the Cherry Blossom Kingdom.
Good for you, Dalton.
Yeah,
it's not unprecedented in history.
That's a nice illustration.
They seem to be thriving now that Wapol is gone. Back with Wapol, he somehow manages to ditch the Marines and run from them on the beach.
With tears sparkling in his eyes.
Give this man a piece of toast in his mouth.
Please don't, actually. I don't want to see what that transformation lies.
Oh, no.
And our final entry...
I don't need to envision a buttery Wapol.
Oh, that's a bad phrase. Hi, welcome to Wapol House. You want the buttery Wapol with me?
Wapol syrup.
Our final entry this week, King No More, Wapol takes up residence in a scrapyard.
And a dog pisses on him.
Sleeping hard now.
Mm.
I'm going to say it again. Right. And a dog pisses on him.
Yes. And that dog pisses on him for the next, like, 6 chapters in a row.
Yeah! Get his ass!
Oda knows
He's
what
He's getting
want.
A rock thrown at him, too.
Yeah.
Good riddance, I say.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck this garbage man.
Now he is literally a garbage man.
Mm-hmm. Back with the Straw Hats, Blackbeard laughs as his prey soars away up into the clouds, and Burgess complains and wants to go after them, but Blackbeard is in no rush, and he figures that they'll run into the Straw Hats again someday.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah.
Van Auger says a very cool one-liner.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, aye, this world is one big, endlessly turning wheel.
He says, if our will is strong, we'll meet them again.
Very concerning statement for the Killswitch Explain Demons fans in the audience.
But also, Burgess, how do you propose?
To go after them?
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
You kind of missed your shot, bud.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, maybe they know about what we learn later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other entrance.
Yeah.
True.
The Straw Hats all gasp for breath in the higher atmosphere, having barely survived this ordeal. And Luffy is the first to point out that they are now sailing on a sea of pure white.
This is a page turn.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Nami notices that the log pose is still pointing up. And Robin guesses that they're still in the middle layer of the Emperor Cloud.
Gotta get even higher.
Wow. Usopp, for some reason, decides to try going for a swim in the clouds.
I think this is the last point in this volume where Usopp's doing okay. The rest of this volume is called Usopp Needs a Hug.
What is it, like page 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's it.
And I
are you alright, Dave?
Yeah.
You made me do a spit take, literally, on my own spit. Poor
Usopp. Oh, no. I do get his reasoning. Like, if a fucking ship could float on the clouds, surely.
Surely I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more buoyant than a giant piece of wood.
Due to these sea clouds' lack of resistance and also their bottomlessness, he damn near falls out of the sky back to the sea below.
Oops.
Yeah, Nico Robin, partway through this happening, is like, So does this ocean even have a bottom? This had not occurred to anyone. We are in the sky. Then another thing I'm really not okay with happens.
Yeah, Luffy and Robin.
Interesting rescue attempt.
I think this is a cool little trick.
It's awesome, but also I don't like looking at it.
Luffy and Robin work together to save him, and I dare not describe it.
I will. I'll do it.
Tyler's taken an aversion to cursed material on this show.
Luffy shoots a gum-gum pistol into the clouds, reaching as far as he can, and Nico Robin activates Ojos Fleur, which makes Evangelion-like eyeballs appear on all over his arm, looking around everywhere. And then she spots him, like, right out from under the bottom of the cloud, because he's just now in free fall. And then does Seis Fleurs, like, making basically a loop of Nico Robin arms budding off of the Luffy arm. Mm-hmm. So, like, two arms sprout out of the Luffy arm, and then hands from the Nico arm sprout from that, and then hands sprout from that, until you basically just make a little loop, right? And grab him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's very Simple. Useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome, but
I'm very glad she's in our crew.
there's a lot of people who are on the same boat as Dave who agree that Robin's powers should not be used in this way.
I think this is the most emphatic demonstration we've had so far, though, of, like, if a Devil Fruit user really gets right down to it and really learns, you know, the
how to use this power
boundaries mm-hmm. of what they can do mm-hmm. it gets wild.
Yeah,
this is shit that I wanted to see in Dragon Ball Z, where I'm like, I know you've got the powers. Yeah. Now I want to see you be crafty with them. I like right. it that, and I definitely think shows like My Hero definitely scratched that itch for me too, where it's like mm-hmm. I want to see you be fucking clever with your
I want to see yeah. you think with yeah, your yeah, brain yeah.
yes.
Instead of throwing the 800th beam scramble.
I know, it doesn't work, Vegeta. We've been through this.
Still doesn't work.
Still not working.
While pulling Usopp up, Luffy also pulls up a sky octopus.
Oops.
Oh no.
It is quite large. And when Zoro slashes it, its tentacles pop like balloons.
Hmm. Interesting.
Usopp also had the unfortunate... had the luck of bringing up a skyfish in his pants with him.
Wow.
This skyfish looks so happy, though.
Yeah. It's psyched.
And he's rolling around on the ground with this horrible creature in his pants, and Nico Robin just looks at this disgrace of a situation and just says, this is an unlucky day.
And then we get the beginning of the mantra, Sky Island is scary. Sky Island is scary.
Sky Island is scary.
Nami and Robin examine this fish, fascinated by its physiology, mm-hmm. and they surmise that the quote-unquote aquatic life up here must have adapted in numerous ways to living in the sky by becoming balloon-like, flat, and aerodynamic, as well as having feather-like scales now.
Hmm.
Sanji immediately sautés it.
Yeah, they turn their back for like 5 seconds and he's already sautéed
next,
it.
Next fucking panel. Yeah.
Luffy says it's pretty good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Not long after things calm down, Chopper spots another pirate ship in the distance.
Hmm.
Unexpected, but
okay.
There it is.
Okay.
Wow. That's me at Sea of Thieves. Oh shit, there's a galleon. Oh fuck.
Oh, it blew up.
Yeah, it is attacked by a man that is skating across the clouds.
Skating, like on rollerblades.
On rollerblade, but for cloud. I also didn't realize this until the reread, like mm-hmm. just now. Let's talk a little bit about the Jolly Roger for that pirate ship that exploded, because you can barely see it, but
yeah,
it's a beetle with a mm-hmm. crown over it, and mm-hmm. under it is the word eraser.
Oh,
that's cool.
I couldn't make it out.
Cat on the what's it? The front
stem
part? Yeah.
Or some kind of like a lion or something. Lioness.
I have no idea what that's in reference to. Any of that.
Yeah.
Really?
I can't really.
That's not an X mark?
No.
Really?
Not as far as I know.
It's probably just a cool thing. Cool Jolly Roger he was wanting to use.
Yeah, it's not an X marks asterisk yet.
yeah, exactly.
The man that blew up the ship, dressed in a grass skirt and an intimidating mask, begins to turn his sights on the Going Merry.
I like this guy a lot.
I don't like his costume design that much.
Yeah.
It's a little, like, 90s, quote-unquote, jungle tribesman kind of design, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where, like, not a lot of thought is put into the implications. But minor gripe. So far I'm with whatever he's selling here.
Yeah, he does have a bazooka, though.
He does.
He do, yeah.
That does.
And wings on his back.
Yeah,
really
like
little
those,
ones.
Like those guardians that we were looking, that we kind of ran into, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The monster trio, which is what the fandom refers to them as, which is Luffy, Zoro, and Sanji.
Okay.
Okay.
Now we have two of our established Straw Hat trios, which are the monster trio and the weakling trio.
Aww.
And the weakling trio is Chopper, Usopp, and Nami.
Can't that be, like, the thinking trio? Yeah.
It is the thinking trio.
It really is.
That also just happens to go along with their lack of physical muscles.
I mean, but... okay.
But Weakling makes it sound like they're not contributing anything.
Right. I didn't say that I like it. I'm just telling you what the fans call them.
I have notes.
And also Robin's there.
Yeah, and Robin is now present.
She's the grown-up. She's not in a clique.
Yeah.
She's God. A tax-paying woman.
Is that why I relate to Robin?
The monster trio is easily defeated, but the attacker is fended off by a mysterious rescuer who introduces himself as the Sky Knight.
Or Skite, for short.
This is a Dark Souls NPC.
Yeah, 100%. He even speaks with, like, the somber tone.
This is this is Ornstein, are you kidding?
Or something.
I'm getting, like, it's Ornstein mixed with, like, Don Quixote vibes.
Right. Very Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Again, Dark Souls NPC.
Despite not being the man named Don Quixote.
Right.
Luffy, Zoro, and Sanji lick their wounds, and Robin figures that they were having trouble adapting to the thinner atmosphere, making it difficult for them to fight back.
Now it feels very DBC.
Well, I mean, Luffy did pass out on the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, increased gravity on the same planet, or whatever.
The Sky Knight asks if they're Blue Sea people. He explains that they are currently sailing on the White Sea, and even further above them is the White Sea, which is the upper stratum of the Emperor Cloud.
Super heavy.
Okay. Yeah.
Before he'll explain any more, though, he wants to talk business. He can offer his rescue services to them, but he will only come if they buy a whistle from him for 5 million extols.
The fuck is an extol?
These Straw Hats have no idea what the fuck an extol is.
All right.
And this, all right, Nisha, we need to say, everything that we're saying here, this is one issue.
Yeah.
Suddenly this arc is just accelerating.
As if blasted by a geyser of water into the clouds.
Mm-hmm. It's again metaphorical.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they have very much just been thrust into this that is already happening just above them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the world isn't going to take its time to explain itself to them.
Mm. There's a separate fucking manga happening like 23,000 feet above you right now.
Yeah. It's funny that you make the Dark Souls comparison, because the thing I've been thinking about this whole volume is that it gives me the feeling of, like, starting a new Souls game. Where, like,
you just wander into this zone.
Yeah. Mm. You're introduced to all these new concepts and figure it out, buddy.
Yeah.
He is surprised to learn that they didn't arrive on the Emperor Cloud by way of the Peak of High West, and they instead rode the knock-up stream. He is very impressed by their bravery.
If there was another way.
Nami is mortified to learn that there was a safer way to get up here.
I could have done without that. All right.
and he in turn is amazed that they made it and that they didn't lose anybody.
Right.
He is stunned.
He says, you either all of you make it or none of you do.
Yeah.
He gives them a free whistle to commend their talents. And he tells them to blow it once and that he'll come and save them again. But before he leaves, he introduces himself as Gonfor. In other translations, it is just Gonfall. And that's probably the one that I'll go with because it's easier to say.
And it's a lot easier to resist making the joke of gone for what? Some snacks?
So he is Gonfall the Sky Knight and his bird partner Pierre.
I love Pierre.
You want to explain?
Yeah, he is a he's a sort of like spotted gull looking kind of creature, I would say. Mm-hmm. But he is a bird that ate the horse fruit, so he can transform into a mighty Pegasus.
Majestic, even.
Majestic with a dorky polka dot pattern.
This is amazing.
Because we get this dope fucking silhouette panel of like Gonfall, like, the Sky Knight, and then this fucking peewee looking horse.
His face looks very much like he ate the donkey fruit.
Oh yeah. I think it got localized to the ass fruit.
Well, that's deeply frightening for several reasons.
After continuing to get acclimated to their new surroundings, the Straw Hats eventually stumble on a place called Heaven's Gate, which is being manned by Inspector Amazon, a small pruny woman with angel wings and a camera. She takes all of their photos and says that they'll need to pay the entrance fee of 1 billion extols per person.
Hmm. When this was declared, I thought getting that much was going to be the whole arc. They were going to be trying to build up enough to get past this...
to get up this gate.
Yeah, to get past this barrier and get to the end game location.
I could definitely see that being the case for a lot of other anime.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this grandma real quick?
Sure.
I'm so glad the grandma for Wind Waker got work after her role with that video game.
Fuck, yeah, she is a Zelda character, isn't she?
I guess this would be before, but either way...
Yeah,
like,
technically this predates it.
This
was her breakout role.
Her breakout role, you're right. Because this just straight up just looks like a Zelda NPC.
Yeah.
Who runs, like, the pictogram shop or whatever. Who runs, like, a skydiving minigame or some shit.
Except in Zelda, she would have these wings that would never be explained.
Yeah.
They're just there.
The Straw Hats ask if what happens if they can't pay the fine. And she says that they're free to go.
It's just a choice that they have to make.
Yeah, you can keep going up if you want.
Then, all right.
So they decide they're gonna go and not pay the fine. And the Going Merry is picked up by the famous Lobster Express.
But also, after they do that, the grandma gives a very ominous smirk.
I'm neither a gatekeeper nor a guardian. I'm merely asking what you wish to do.
Which is a yet another very video gamey vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Lobster Express tows the Going Merry the rest of the way up to the upper stratum of the Emperor Cloud along the Milky Road, which is just a little like river of clouds, a winding river that just sort of corkscrews up. And then Amazon reports in to the omnipotent Kami and his vassals and notifies them that 7 people have illegally entered Godland Skypea and that they should render heavenly judgment.
Hmm.
I'm sure it's fine.
It's fine.
The Straw Hats eventually arrive on Angel Beach in Skypea, the land of the gods on the white sea.
Can we take a moment take a moment to talk about this 2-page spread?
Yeah.
It's gore. Like, you thought the first one was a beautiful cloudscape. Let's get into it.
Now there's stuff on it.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those spreads that benefits more from being on a digital platform.
Mm-hmm. You don't have the fold or the crease.
Mm-hmm. The crease unfortunately covers a lot of good shit.
Oh yeah, you're right. There's some cute little towers, churches, and stuff right in the middle of the composition there. Yeah. I have a theory for this arc. I have a theory that for this arc, Eiichiro Oda was told, we want to be you to be doing like you were doing before with like really elaborate, beautiful landscapes and backgrounds, but we have to really tighten our ink budget this quarter. So not a lot of blacks or grays. Can you make a whole landscape with just white shapes? And
just
lines?
Line work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Oda said, "Hold my nib."
Literally, because I'm not using it.
Yeah.
Luffy, Usopp, and Chopper bound onto the beach, amazed by their surroundings. And Zoro tosses the anchor overboard, wondering if it will even catch on anything.
Yeah, also a very fair question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what you do in a video game. You test the boundaries of the world you're in.
Yeah.
Trying to clip through the...
Does this game have
clouds.
Fall damage?
Oh, no.
Maybe not on the cloud beach, though. Cloud sand looks very soft.
Nami accidentally forgot to release the South Bird before they got blasted into the sky.
Oh, no.
And now the poor thing is stuck up in Skypiea with them.
Well.
Does South exist up here?
So,
yeah.
So it just flies off, I presume, to the South to live out its life in the sky now.
Oh, God.
Probably has an easier way of getting down than they do.
So in addition to trespassing, they're also introducing species.
Just
not
exotic species.
Oh god, you're right.
We're going to have... That's how we get, like, invasive south-facing birds up here.
Right.
Oh my god.
New bacterias.
Mm-hmm.
For all to enjoy. I think the real story behind this is Oda or one of the editors realized, wait a second, we didn't really do anything with that bird. They still have the bird, don't they?
Not anymore, they don't.
Yeah, that's Oda.
Because if they have a bird, they have a compass, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be doing that in this show.
All of these Straw Hats go ashore, and they begin to bask in the wonders of Skypiea. Also thrilled that there's no way that the Navy can find them up here, so they can finally relax for a bit.
That was very funny to me. Like, that's what you get out of this. You sure are pirates.
Yeah.
Ain't no fucking cops up here, hell yeah.
Also, this is Chopper's first beach, which seems like a not great first impression just going forward.
Ah, this is what beaches are.
Yeah.
Cloud waves rolling up against cloud sand.
Also, I want to take a...
It is pretty cool, though.
I want to take a moment to appreciate Nami's new outfit for this. Very, very early Dragon Ball-esque camo patterned bikini top. Mm-hmm. Like I get
probably
really,
a direct reference.
Yeah, I get very, very Bulma vibes from this outfit.
I do like in the big panel of everybody playing on the beach that you can see Nika Robin just like strolling across the clouds to join them in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I relate to Nika Robin in a lot of scenes. I'm not gonna lie. 90% of the times, the thing she's doing is exactly what I would be doing.
I like that they are all basking in this weird, cool stuff that is clearly, like, an inhabited island.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just
right.
furniture here. Mm-hmm. They're like, whoa, so weird!
It's cloud furniture.
And it is all seemingly literally made of clouds.
Yeah. They encounter an angel woman who is just playing harp on the beach with her pet cloud fox.
Sure.
Love it.
Getting big Marin from Link's Awakening vibes from her.
She offers them a strange greeting of Hesso.
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 She introduces herself as Konus and the fox as Sue.
I love Sue.
So do you want to talk about Hesso?
Yeah.
Hesso, why not?
It kind of sounds like hello.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what they were going for.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
But it has a Japanese meaning.
What's that?
Hesso means belly button in Japanese.
Huh?
Which is kind of explaining why Luffy makes that weird face that he makes when he hears it.
Oh. Is belly button a bad word in his part of the East Blue?
No, it's just a weird thing for somebody to say as a greeting, probably.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Like you walk up to a stranger on the beach and they say, belly button.
Belly button.
Yeah. Exactly.
Immediately look down. What's wrong with it?
So this, I feel like this is a strange and very layered joke that's happening.
Okay.
Because it does kind of sound like hello, mm-hmm. which is kind of where the greeting aspect comes from. But it is also a subtle hint to the nature of a certain character we'll meet in the future, based on some Japanese folklore and superstitions.
Huh. Okay.
So there is a Japanese superstition that in a thunderstorm, you should cover your belly button so that the Raijin, the thunder god, doesn't come down and steal it.
Steal your belly button?
Yeah, how does yeah. one take a and belly
this
button?
This is like a big concern.
Does that mean
I guess.
If your belly button was stolen, would you just have like a just a smooth middle section, just Ken doll? Like,
I believe that's the case.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that concept either. So,
also in this superstition, I believe that the Raijin steals them and eats them.
A delicacy, I see.
Yeah.
All right.
Again, even I don't. How do you eat the absence of something?
Yeah. Well, he would have to take a little
bit.
That's even
more disturbing.
He'd have to take a little bit more than he needs. I would assume.
It's getting metaphysical now.
No, it's still just physical, and I don't like it.
Maybe.
So all that to say that there's probably a Raijin running around up here in the sky.
Hmm.
Okay. I don't like this Skypiea place. I'm going to tell you right now, Tyler.
Yeah.
It's very strange. You could fall right through. There's balloon fish. There's Raichus out there eating belly buttons. I don't like it.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To say the least.
They are eventually joined by Konus's father, Pagia, who is riding on what he calls a waver.
Wave race.
It looks fucking rad.
It's... We need to appreciate this for a moment. It's yeah. literally a jet ski.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But... It is appropriate to
it's
the
It's a one-piece jet ski.
Yes, it is appropriate to the Milo of the world. It looks like a tiny boat, mm-hmm. like a boat made of wood with portholes in it somehow. Mm-hmm. And like the handlebars are like a diving bell, but then also it has like a rocket engine strapped on the back.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre
it's
and
got
so
shark
one-piece.
Fins.
Yeah, for speed, the shark fin.
Yeah.
This is that strange boat that Nolan mentioned in his logs.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it is powered, allegedly, by something called a dial.
She kind of says, you must know what a dial is.
Come
yeah,
on.
This is basic shit.
Babies know what dials are.
Yeah.
Konus and Pagia invite the pirates home for dinner. First, Luffy tries to use the waver, but he is no good at piloting it. It is much too squirrely for him.
Mm. It shakes a lot if you can't yeah. intuit the waves.
Also, he is equally good at swimming up here.
Yeah, that's an important note.
Which is later explained.
Really?
Like,
interesting. You're right.
Like a page later.
I didn't even make that connection. Yeah.
I do really appreciate the panel of Luffy losing control of the wave racer. Just jiggling and jostling back and forth and him going, aga ga ga, waga ga ga ga, ha ba 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 ba.
Very real.
He turns into Courage the Cowardly Dog.
I mean, Luffy wouldn't be able to swim regardless because he couldn't swim before he ate the devil fruit.
Right.
Oh, wait. It's like, oh, right, I was dog shit at this.
I've always been garbage at this.
Nami, however, is a natural at piloting the waver thanks
Hell yeah.
to her navigational prowess.
I
feel like everything about Nami is just like. She just knows how fucking meteorology works. Like the
and
first
it
time
gets
even,
her by in life.
Really, like even when we first ran into her before she was like part of a crew, she like outwitted some pirate she stole from by like, ooh, the air pressure dropped over here, so that means there's a whirlpool over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah, she's just good at this.
There's a shot of Usopp reacting to her riding it easily. Is this the first time we get that kind of visual gag of the eye popping and the tongue wiggly sticking out?
Let me look at it.
I think that's just Usopp's face.
Because it's.
I think we've definitely gotten like eye popping. I don't know that we've gotten that like
yeah, it,
wiggly tongue before.
It eventually becomes kind of a reoccurring visual gag, but I think this is the first time we see it.
Nami continues to ride the waver for a while as the Straw Hats follow Konus and Pagia home, and Luffy subtly hopes that she sinks. is a little jealous that he couldn't ride it.
Luffy, you dick.
Some sour grapes up here.
A little bit.
I love that he sticks his tongue out and then Sanji smacks him in the back of the head, making him bite his tongue.
God.
They encounter a cloud quarry where they see folks at work cutting clouds for building materials. And Pagia begins to explain how the clouds of Sky Islands work. There are two distinct cloud types, which are island clouds and sea clouds, both of which are different from the normal clouds that the Straw Hats would be familiar with. This is all due to sea prism stone from down below being hurled into the sky by volcanoes and then being absorbed into the moisture in the air and forming these clouds.
There's a lot of words thrown around here to create this science.
Mm-hmm.
This happens in sci-fi a lot where it's just like, let's just say a lot of sciencey words.
Yeah. To and then, give it the air of legitimacy.
Yeah.
It'll all work out.
He says that this is caused by the presence of an ingredient in sea prism, which is called pyroblowin.
Okay.
And where does pyroblowin come from? Well, there's only God knowing.
Island clouds can be cut and compressed into any desired shape and density, allowing for the construction of everything from buildings to furniture to man-made canals.
Very convenient.
Yeah. Also at their home, Konus shows off the various dials that the Sky People use in their day-to-day life.
Yeah, how do dials work exactly?
They are shells that have various properties, allowing for the storage of various things, like sound and light.
Which are then, like, reflected and reversed.
Mm-hmm. She gives an example with tone dials that can be used to record and reproduce sound, which she says they mostly use to record music.
Hmm. That's clever.
Got some sweet albums up here. Mm-hmm.
Luffy uses it the way I definitely would. I use those little recording, repeating boxes we used to have as kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just goes, Usopp, you idiot.
And now it's permanently in that shell.
My kids were home early.
I just had a visceral reaction to that.
Hi, kids, we're home early.
It is interesting because there's points where they're talking about the dials, and it is in the Japanese written as dairu.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's points later where they're talking about specific dials where there's a kanji used, and the katakana to the side says dial, but the kanji is the kanji for shellfish.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure where that was landed on then.
Yeah.
Where it came from.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of, in anime and manga, where they use English words that
just sound cool.
Yeah.
Just like we do with other languages.
I mean,
I think everyone does it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound, like, inappropriate. It's a word that, like, oh yeah, of course, dial.
Mm-hmm.
Of course that's what this is.
Yeah,
sure.
But meanwhile, nothing about it is functionally similar to an actual dial.
Yeah.
Hmm.
She lists off some other types of dials, such as wind dials, lamp dials, flame dials, scent dials, vision dials, and many more.
Now, you can make a killing with those scent dials. you can open your own heavenly Yankee candle up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, ladies and gentlemen, looks like we got ourselves a new shonen battle element.
Yeah. Sanji gets a crash course in Sky Cuisine from Pagia.
Yum, yum.
He does almost die when he tries a sauce that apparently had already spoiled, though.
I love that. That's so real.
Throw it away!
Yeah, sorry, this is still in my kitchen.
I love how it's spoiled, but it is still sky blue.
The others start to get a little worried that Nami hasn't come back yet, and Konus wonders that, or worries that she may have strayed to the one place that no one is supposed to go.
Hmm.
Probably would have been good to mention that ahead of time.
Yeah, when you let her hang out there with the waiver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Tyler.
Uh-huh.
I'm never going to get a chance to drop this again. I bet, you know why I bet all that Sky Cuisine is so yummy?
Mm-hmm.
It's a light meal.
In fact, Nami has stumbled on that very place that she's not supposed to go. It is known as Upper Yard. It is the domain of the Kami, and it is a jungle of absolutely enormous trees.
This does not look like the lookout at all. It looks a bit like Little Garden.
Yeah, yeah. But up in the sky. Luffy is pretty interested to learn that there's a place he absolutely positively isn't allowed to go to.
And all the other Straw Hats know him well enough by now that it's like, alright, well, there's nothing we can do about it.
He is going to go there.
We're going there.
Luffy assures them that he just wants to go look for Nami, and Konos warns him not to do anything to incur the wrath of Kami Enaru. He is Enaru in the Viz translation. I think they stuck with Enaru in the Funimation dub as well. But a lot of fan translations will use Enel. Yeah. E-N-E-L.
Yeah, I still call him Enel. I can't.
I believe that's the Romanized spelling also.
Enaru.
In the same way that we... You mentioned this before we were recording, that it was in the same vein as, like, the biblical angels having L kind of endings, suffixes.
Yeah, there's some trivia here on the wiki for him that says that Enlil's name may be a reference to the ancient Mesopotamian deity of Enlil, and or the Semitic deity El, from which descends many names meant to honor the biblical gods such as Michael and Raphael.
Yeah. Enlil is hypothesized by some historians as basically being the root of where the concept of kings comes from.
Mm-hmm.
That people would say, you know, in times of crisis, well, you know, Enlil has chosen this one to lead us through the crisis. And then one day someone said, well, Enlil still wants me to be in charge forever. and that's where kings came from.
I wonder if that will tie into One Piece at all.
Indeed, I wonder. Who can say?
Another fun fact, Enel's name is the same as that of Italy's largest electricity provider. Spelled with identical characters in Japanese.
Okay.
Huh. Love that.
I'm sure that's
what a weird coincidence.
That's probably where he got it.
Oh, I was going to say that came second, and they named it after the One Piece character.
Did we address, I don't think we did, another fan translation issue that was debated for a long time early on was whether it's supposed to be Luffy or Rufy.
You're right, Luffy or Rufy.
Yeah. Oh, huh. Rufy.
Rufy?
Dear.
Oh, that wouldn't track well with the English-speaking audiences.
That kind of comes up in this volume, doesn't it? Is this the one that has, like,
it has all the international
names. Languages for the, like, naming for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we kind of glossed over it.
Yeah, where is that?
In Did Singapore, they call it Lufu.
Pretty good.
Yeah. They do write it with the L in this. But also...
But this is also translation, so...
Yeah, I don't know if it was written in Roman characters... in the actual manga.
Right.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, over at Upper Yard, Nami is hearing voices in the jungle, but she is attacked by the same warrior that first attacked them when they arrived in the sky.
This motherfucker.
This is where shit goes off the rails for me in terms of tracking what is going on.
Yeah, I don't know what this man does.
Because we're cutting back and forth between... this guy coming up on Nami, but then there's some shit going on in the woods.
Yeah. In Upper Yard itself, a random pirate runs for his life, hounded by three weirdos and a giant dog.
How do you get up here?
The weirdos don't seem to get along with one another, and they are attacking each other in an effort to be the one who catches this pirate.
One of them appears to be Robbie Rotten from Lazy Town.
Yeah.
I ain't wrong.
Nope.
No, you're not. The one that we'll meet later, I think, looks like Paul Williams. The round glasses and everything.
Okay. Yeah, there's a guy who's just his theme is just round. He's got a round body, yaddy yaddy, and a round glasses.
If you are unfamiliar with who Paul Williams is, you might recognize him as the piano teacher from Dexter's Lab. Yeah.
Oh.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh my god, amazing.
Like, which is funny because the guy with the sunglasses, he looks like Rob Halford. He's a very famous heavy metal singer from Judas Priest.
Round guy gives me Clockwork Orange vibes.
That as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Certainly the jumpsuit outfit.
And the hat.
And the hat. The bowler. Yeah.
But I think the theme of musicians is pretty strong here.
Yeah.
The pirate stumbles out of the onto the edge of Upper Yard, and he begins to call out to Nami for help. He says that he missed the boat, got left behind here. She hesitates, not knowing if the waver will be able to support both of them, when suddenly this man is enveloped in a beam of light from the sky.
That shot is fucking intense.
Yeah.
He is then disintegrated by an enormous laser of pure electricity that also cuts through the trees and the soil surrounding him.
It's a lot easier. You say.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to tell what it is in the anime where there is color.
Sure. So basically,
it was in the manga, it just appears to be like a generic energy beam, like you would see in a Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, it looks like a ray from God. Just
And it's certainly a heavenly ray.
Yeah, smite.
A bolt from the blue.
Yeah.
No, the blue is down there.
Yeah, it's a bolt from the white.
Under. They're on the white.
The warrior behind Nami curses Eneru for attacking something that he calls Varse.
How dare he do that to the Varse?
Nami overhears the now four weirdos that are loitering around the scene of destruction.
Yeah, this Metal Gear Solid bunch of fucking fuckers.
The fucking Cobra unit over here.
Yeah.
One of them with a Coolio do.
Yeah.
Who are complaining about Kami Eneru handling things himself, leaving them with nothing to do. The Coolio haired one fills them in that Amazon's report came in about Blue Sea people illegally entering Skypiea. So they do have something to get up to.
Because they didn't pay the toll.
Yeah.
Of, you know, what was it, a billion?
The troll toll?
X-tolls. They didn't pay the troll toll. meanwhile, back on Angel Island, the other Straw Hats are stopped by Captain McKinley, who is the leader of the White Berets, the Skypiean police force.
So
there are police up here.
I was about to say.
Sky cops. I do like their salute.
It's very good.
The one hand is behind their back, the other hand is up behind their head with the devil horns thrown up behind it so that they appear like real horns.
They're giving themselves devil horns.
They give themselves little bunny ears. Devil horns.
So Jason, you remember how I was making fun of you earlier for glossing over the tree design as being quote unquote normal?
Yeah.
I forgot that the White Braze even had a unique salute. This panel doesn't even register for me anymore.
Yeah. Looking right at it, don't even register.
Yeah, of course this is what they do.
I like his poofy cloud pants.
Par for the course.
Yeah, they have cool cloud pants. Or pants that have cloud designs on them.
Because they don't need camouflage like
Yeah, you need to be specific, Tyler, because they might be pants, in fact, woven out of clouds.
They might be, I don't know.
We haven't talked about this hairstyle that seems to be popular. Is it a hairstyle, or do they have antennas?
Again, another example of me just glossing over details.
Everyone kind of has hair tennas going on.
Yeah.
They have hair tennas, and they have usagis at the top. McKinley informs them that they are currently only Class 11 criminals, meaning that if they pay a fine, they'll be able to wipe the record clean and continue on as legal tourists.
Oh, thank God.
So it's a GTA style.
Nice. The fine is 10 times the entrance fee, which the Straw Hats learn is the equivalent of 7 million berries, which they still think is too steep.
I just want to call attention to this panel that where Sanji says... we finally find out that 70 billion X-tolls are 7 million berries, and Sanji goes, "That's a fortune! Do you realize how many tons of rice you could buy with that? We risked our lives to get to this country, now you want us to pay a fortune to stay here?" I know people who use subtext in their work, and they are all cowards.
Thank you, Jay.
I forget what that's from, but it's not from me.
It's from Garth Marenghi's Garth Marenghi.
Yeah. That was it.
McKinley continues to rack up offenses that they have incurred, such as damaging a waiver, which they found in the wreck of the St. Briss.
Sky Island property.
Yeah, stealing that waiver from Sky Island in the first place.
Fucking hate these guys. Immediately God. Assume it's stolen property.
Sky bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Nami arrives ready to negotiate until she also hears what the fine is, and then in a rage runs over Captain McKinley
Fuck
with her
yeah.
waiver.
That whips.
She just enters a fugue state.
Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? 7 million?
And then snaps out of it like, oh, what did
oh,
I
shit.
Do?
This gets the Straw Hats up to class 5 criminals for striking a government official. And McKinley declares them exiled to the clouds in the name of Kami Enaru.
Aren't they already in the clouds?
Konis explains that yeah. this means that they and their ship will be stranded on a tiny island cloud with no way to escape until they eventually just die someday. Robin figures that this is what must have happened to the crew of the St. Briss.
Usopp has a flashback.
Yeah.
The Straw Hats refuse to go quietly, so the fighting begins. And the White Berets launch arrows with cloud dials attached to them, which leave trails of milky cloud road behind them, that the Berets then begin to skate upon.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. It's very unique combat up here.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. I have some notes.
Again,
number one,
new battle mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, very cool concept, because I like the idea of just paramilitarized Cupids. Number two, love the idea of shooting a road that your troops then skate on.
Yeah.
But number three, most important, why not shoot them with the arrows?
Well, they probably aimed them at them, but if they miss, then you have a road.
It's just a bonus.
Mm. Yeah. Luffy tries out a new attack, which is Gum Gum Fireworks, where he becomes his own personal cartoon fight cloud.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. His arms and legs going every which way.
This is a very Roger Rabbit attack.
I believe this would be a Burst 5.
Yeah,
centered on your square.
McKinley declares the Straw Hats are now class 2 criminals for resisting arrest, and that the commies' vassals on Upper Yard will deal with them personally.
But also he says Hesso at the end of that.
Hesso.
So it's not, it's both, it, maybe it's like Aloha.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
It's like, hello, goodbye, and I will smite you in the name of God.
Every which way.
Yeah.
It's a very versatile word.
And
language
also,
so
again, yeah. belly button.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
You just know Oda was giggling every time he wrote that.
He had to have been.
Yeah. Just uncontrollable giggling.
Luffy is miffed at Nami for ruining his adventure to the place that he's not supposed to go to by coming back on her own. She tries and fails to warn him about the scary guys that are there.
That panel is so fantastic. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 word bubbles of her just yelling at him and just smacking him over and
smacking
over
him
and over
bat,
again.
Bat, bat
and
on the
pushing
head.
Him back a little further every time.
What adventure? Didn't you hear what I said? Those are scary guys on that island. If you'd see what I saw, I wouldn't want to go there. I don't know if they're gods or what, but they definitely have godlike powers. I'm never going back there again.
Bat, and bat, we'll go bat. Without you.
What's more important, Luffy yells at her, your life or adventure? And she says, my life, and after that, money.
I'm gonna say that number three is tangerines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Now that they need to flee from Skypiea, the Straw Hats have the sudden realization that they have no idea how to get back down.
Hmm.
Kona says that they would need to travel back down to the White Sea, all the way to the east, to a place called Cloud's End. But she warns them that that too will be a dangerous journey. Luffy, Usopp, and Sanji go back with Konis and Pagia to their house for food and supplies, as Nami, Chopper, Robin, and Zoro prepare the Merry for the departure. Short adventure up here in Sky Island.
Alright.
Let's fucking go.
From the house, Usopp hears a commotion happening back on the beach, and he sees that the Mary is being carried away by a giant lobster with God stamped on its head.
Fucking Christ.
I hate when that happens.
I love the God lobster.
It's my favorite B-52 song.
Oh my God.
But it wasn't a god.
Poggia explains that they are being carried away to a sacrificial altar in the upper yard as part of their criminal punishment. Really, though, they're just hostages, and the ones being punished are Luffy, Usopp, and Sanji, who now have to undergo a challenge to try and rescue their crew.
And especially Sanji, who also has to live with the fact that Nami put her shirt back on.
He's just devastated by this knowledge.
Her day at the beach has ended.
I don't know if that was intentional by the, you know, the Cloud Enforcers, but definitely a huge problem for him.
Mm-hmm.
Konos and Poggia take them through Lovely Street on the way to the wharves where they can pick up a riverboat to head to Upper Yard. And they encounter a statue encased in glass in the middle of town. And Konos explains that they call it Varse. And to the inhabitants of the sky, it is an object of eternal admiration.
Hmm. He looks like a nice friend.
So what is like... Varse? Because it's this, but also that guy was mad that Eneru attacked it.
Mm-hmm.
But he attacked that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was using it as a phrase for outsiders.
Is, Varse... Is there some kind of a Japanese? Is it just basu in?
I can tell you what it is in Japanese, but then it would spoil what it is.
Shit! Then not do that.
That seems like information that would be available outside of the comic, though.
That's true.
I don't. Huh. I guess it's up to the. I guess it's up to the rest of you. Like.
Yeah. What's the vote?
I'm fine with it personally.
Go ahead.
It is Verth.
That doesn't clear it up, Tyler.
Yeah, that doesn't help at all.
V-E-A-R-T-H.
Oh, of Earth, maybe? Is it referencing like a person of the Blue Sea?
Interesting.
Are they the real holy ones, and they've been deposed?
Oh my God.
Konos rents them Karasumaru, which is a gondola themed after a crow, and it looks ridiculous.
I like it.
Where's Bunclay?
Luffy is ungrateful.
Yeah.
He liked that other boat better.
It was a cool... Well, to be fair, it was a cooler but looking boat.
Yeah.
It had a bull on it.
In Luffy's defense, much cooler.
But I think if this took place in a different time period and Luffy was a Haikyuu fan, that Luffy would appreciate the crow boat.
Oh, yeah. If only Haikyuu was out by then.
If only Luffy knew.
Yeah.
He'd like Hinata.
Get in the crow boat, Luffy.
Oh my God. There's a lot of layers to that joke.
So good.
That was folks, a dense joke.
Yeah, if you got that whole combo, like a delicious tiramisu, you're getting all the notes of the coffee soaked in, everything.
She tries to send them on their way, but Luffy points out that ever since they left the house, she's been shaking.
Uh-oh.
She's not the only one.
Yeah, he tells her that she should speak up if she's scared of something. And she suddenly breaks down.
And another very good, Luffy is actually observant. Like, don't underestimate him, as dumb as he is.
He does pay attention.
I think that Oda spaces those moments out pretty much perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every now and then it kind of drips back in, and it's like,
Right.
There's things he's thoughtful about.
I like it.
Luffy has emotional intelligence.
And, like, as soon as he calls her out, you get that, like, ominous, everyone on the street just, like, stops.
Yeah.
To see what she does.
Some Truman Show shit happening now.
Ooh. Oh, God.
She breaks down and tells them that she is the one who called the Lobster Express on their friends. She has also been leading them to their doom.
I was holding my breath when we got to that panel of where she says, "Don't you think it's strange that I tell you how to get to the challenge and even lend you my boat?"
Indeed, I did.
That was quite strange.
Also, shout out to the shopping bag of this man in the foreground, where he buys all his stuff from Sky Mart.
God.
I miss those magazines.
Yeah, whatever happened.
Boom. Oh, man, now we know why they're in the plains.
Oh, my God.
But that moment gave me very... I don't know if saying this is really worth it, but because it's not quite that heavy, but it gave me kind of the tone of like a Holocaust era film. Of someone turning over, you know, their Jewish friend to the Nazis or something like that.
In the absolute silence.
Yeah, and the like.
Yeah.
The obvious regret on their face, but they like they didn't want to do it.
She goes on to explain that if a citizen of Skypiea knows that someone is a criminal and does not lead them to the punishment site, that citizen is killed. She says it is the duty of every citizen, and then asks, isn't it insane? This whole place is insane. And everybody in town starts to scramble at her, calling her a blasphemer, trying to shut her up before she lets out too much.
Yeah. Oh boy.
And Luffy gets mad at her, not for what she's done, but that she told them that, so now she's going to get in trouble.
That she has endangered herself with this revelation.
Right.
And it's, like, the way that the scene unfolds is very consistent, where, like, Luffy immediately notices this thing, and I'm sure the reason he noticed that she was uncomfortable is that someone who he has already begun to think of as his friend is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's not acceptable, and he has to do something about it.
He needs to alleviate that however he can.
I'm going to tell you about a panel that sucks.
Yeah.
It's where the angels are turning on her and they go, it's all over, it's too late for her. And then you hear the phrase, don't go near that girl. And then the very next panel, you see Luffy and Kanis both lit in that very eerie underlight or like overcast lighting that the human had right before the god beam came down.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, oh, this sucks. The phrase don't get near that girl is very like, oh, this happens a lot.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Up here.
The punishment is coming.
It's like the particle cannon from Command and Conquer.
Surprise, One Piece is a dystopia.
Yeah.
One person out there is going to get that thing I just said, and I'm not going to be happy about it.
I appreciate we glossed over it a little bit, but I do appreciate that all three of them in unison demand to know why she just told them what she told them.
Yeah,
because they're all on the same page about this. Even Usopp. Luffy dodges out of the way of this beam of light, carrying Kanis to safety.
I'll tell you why they're so mad.
Because
they just got done with this shit with Vivi.
Yeah. They're starting at square one again.
Just set that to rights minutes ago.
When are we going to be fucking pirates?
The lightning strike comes down and destroys the area that they were standing in, and they are both caught by Gonfall, the Sky Knight.
Yay!
He says to consider it a favor. He asks
these favors a lot.
Yeah. He asks that they entrust Kanis' well-being to him, and that he won't let Enel harm her. I'm gonna try and go with Enel, even though I wrote all these notes as Eneru, but I'm gonna try and correct myself.
That is quite a declaration that he makes, that he can protect her from the particle cannon sky god.
From God? Yeah, that's a tall order,
Does anybody else here read Berserk?
Yeah.
Nope.
I've
not read all of it yet.
He reminds me a lot of the Skull Knight.
A little bit,
in the way he operates.
The same sort of narrative position.
But also, like, every shot is, like, from below him while he's on his mighty steed.
His mighty steed, Pierre.
Yeah.
Mighty, in quotes.
Luffy, Sanji, and Usopp set off on their shitty little crow boat, and Gonfall carries Kanis off to safety, and she begins to beg him to return to them all, and refers to him as Kami. The plot thickens.
Very dramatic end panel.
Yeah.
This might be coincidental. Maybe it is. But the little pins supporting his cape, you know, those little things. I don't know what they're actually called. So they're kind of flowery, right?
Yeah, it's not called a ballet.
Might be an epaulette. They and I double checked, and they bear a resemblance to the symbol for the Japanese emperor, aka the chrysanthemum throne.
Yeah.
That's a weird coincidence.
Anyway, just thought that was interesting.
They also vaguely resemble those, like, pumpkin-shaped nuts that they found on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Sure does.
On their way through the jungle, Luffy and company clear their first challenge, which is passing through a deadly stream of pendulum sickle traps that nearly scuttle their ship.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The video game vibes do not let up.
Yep.
There's a symbol on one of the shields. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it is though. But there's a lot of Varse idols everywhere.
Yeah.
They arrive at a crossroads where four different paths they can take are labeled Challenge of the Swamp, Challenge of the Iron, Challenge of the String, and Challenge of the Ball.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, we cut over to the sacrificial altar, where Zoro is trying to muscle his way past all of the man-eating fish that are placed to keep hostages put.
I like his goggles.
Yeah, they're neat.
Mm-hmm.
The Mary is too damaged to sail again after without receiving repairs, so Zoro plans a little expedition into the jungle for supplies and also to go have a chat with this Kami.
Mm-hmm.
He's not impressed by whoever this Kami is. He says that he does not pray to him.
What a fucking cool line that is.
Yeah.
With a perfect, like, you know, sassy Zoro face.
I don't pray to this god. Hey.
So I don't know him anything.
Yeah.
And then in the background is Nami actively praying, "Dear Kami, I don't know this guy."
Chopper's impressed though.
Chopper is into everything that's been happening so far.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the coolest thing he can imagine.
Robin offers to come along too, because she is intrigued by the historical value of the altar that they're on.
There might be valuable artifacts or jewels.
She knows how to motivate pirates.
Yeah.
Yeah, to which Nami's like, alright, I'm in. Let's go.
the jewels,
second,
you say.
The second the J-E-W-E-L came out of her mouth, Nami says, I'm in!
Chopper stays behind to guard the Mary while they're gone. And it is only after they all leave that he realizes that he is in more danger than they are now, because he is all alone.
Oops.
Poor Chopper.
Himself.
Hope you packed a rumble ball.
The face where he has the realization is so fucking funny.
Back with Luffy, they decide to take on the challenge of the ball, because Luffy thinks it sounds fun, and Usopp thinks it sounds the least threatening. That's the easy mode.
This is chapter 246, by the way, and it opens with shots of the four vassals of Kami, also similarly, like, ominously lit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we get a class 2 criminal offense. They have no respect for the Kami. Let's give them the challenge. They choose, we provide. Guilt is to live with ignorance. There is no peace to be found in the heavens.
Whew. They mean business.
Who the fuck are these people?
Yeah.
Again, this would fit perfectly in a Dark Souls game.
Mm-hmm.
There is no peace to be found in heaven.
Yeah. In the grim darkness of Sky Kingdom, there's only something something.
The Lord of Flame, I mean, you know.
When they exit the tunnel, that is the entrance to the challenge, they plummet down a cliff, and they find themselves deeper in the jungle and surrounded by balls made of clouds that are just floating all around them.
Then this happens. We need to talk about this one panel real quick.
Mm-hmm.
As you know the one.
Yeah, I do.
Where Sanji, Luffy, and Usopp are about to plummet to their doom. So we've got Sanji, eyes popping out, teeth huge, cigarette hanging out. We've got Luffy, eyes popping out, his tongue is doing the wiggle thing. And we've got Usopp, eyes fully popped out, removed from his head,
his
teeth popped out of his mouth like cartoon dentures.
Yeah. It's a lot.
I hope it gets better from here.
It's gone full.
I really do.
It's full Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, Melissa has pointed out in the chat that the kanji symbol on those shields that you pointed out, Jason, are for Kami.
Thank you, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa is such an asset to this podcast.
Truly, we would be useless without you.
We covered like 300 episodes of Dragon Ball Z, and I didn't immediately recognize the symbol for Kami.
The one that's written on his fucking shirt.
Yeah. It's on his shirt. It's his name tag.
Look, kanji written in different ways, presented in different contexts, it can be hard to recognize.
Sure.
I fucking drew it. Like, all throughout high school. Yeah. But I didn't recognize it.
Sanji frets about not seeing any vassals because he was sure that there would be one for each of the challenges. Usopp and Luffy start playing with some of the balls that are floating around them.
Naturally.
So that seems like a great idea.
Suddenly, a snake pops out of one of them.
Fuck yeah.
That they were tossing around. Another one gets close to Sanji and he tries to kick it out of the way, assuming that they are all just nests of snakes. But it explodes on impact.
Once again,
this is a very good, like,
fully Looney Tunes.
That's a very,
yeah it's a
very
perfect
Looney Tunes
Wile E. Coyote moment.
Yeah. Sanji's foot still in the air.
Mm-hmm. They're all covered in soot.
They suddenly realize that all of these balls are booby trapped.
This is
the challenge.
This is the worst gacha game I've ever played.
Oh, I wonder what's in a wonder ball.
What's in a wonder ball? Who knows what surprises a wonder ball can hide? Yummy, nasty chocolate with candy shapes inside. Oh, I wonder what's in a wonder ball?
They are mocked from afar by the first of Kami's vassals, Satori, the very round man.
The ball man.
I want to, real quick, because I feel like this is going to come up later.
Mm-hmm.
I really like his outfit because we first see him in sort of a yoga pose, right? Like his feet are, his legs are crisscross applesauce. His hands are kind of like in a circle shape and resting in his lap. And his spherical uniform, when viewed straight on, looks like it has like a line of circles. And it made me think of like those chakra diagrams you see.
Oh yeah, totally.
That go up the spine. And it made me think of that when we get revealed something shortly after, so bear that in mind.
Hang on just a second. I just want to look at something real quick here. Just want to see. Okay, I wasn't sure if it was actually written that way. Satori is written in kana in the Japanese manga, but the translation of Satori as a word means enlightenment.
He dances around, laughing gleefully at their plight, but right before Luffy can attack him, he calls out the fact that Luffy can stretch, to Luffy's surprise.
Oh, so you can stretch!
But he ain't even stretched yet.
What?
How do you know that?
Satori effortlessly dodges Luffy's punch, and then he palms the rubber boy's face, and after a beat, Luffy goes flying, ricocheting across the forest.
It's like a fucking DBZ slam.
Yeah.
Sanji suffers the same fate, and Satori anticipates his moves aloud, and then sends him flying, and finally Usopp as well, and Satori refers to this as impact.
Mm. It destroys the body, starting with the spinal cord. Cool.
Mantra is a power granted only to the faithful.
What kind of Mortal Kombat shit is this?
I'm gonna be real. This is just making me want to read Kill 6 Billion Demons.
Yeah, get to it.
I know.
I'm just gonna read the last of his, or the last two pages of his speech.
It's real good.
He says, "Ho ho ho! My name is Satori. I am one of the vassals that serve the omnipotent Kami Enel. I rule over the Vars in the Forest of No Return. Your boat will be lost in this great forest." It will roam this forest on the Milky Road until it eventually finds the only exit on its own. Perhaps you already know this, but you'll never find your way to the sacrificial altar without that boat. You must find your ship and board it before that happens. But of course, the countless surprise clouds floating around in here, and I won't allow you to do that.
Surprise clouds.
Welcome to the forbidden sacred land, the Upper Yard. Ho! Only 10% survive the Forest of No Return. This is the challenge of the ball.
10% is better than I would have expected, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like he delivers that like one of those like mobile ads where it's like, only 10% of users solve this puzzle.
I was thinking of Mario Maker.
Can Luffy, Sanji, and Usopp find the right rod to slide to get back to their boat?
Oh no, that's the one that made the sludge come out of the toilet. Oh man. Oh,
no.
Now he's getting melted by the gold.
Any other thoughts for this volume?
I like Pagaya's beard.
It's a good
beard. Got a good face.
Yeah.
Which is mostly just beard and no mouth.
Yeah.
I like Sky Quixote. He's a lot of fun. I'm interested into seeing like what the fuck any of this shit is that is happening on this day. Because it all... Okay, we were mentioning the Chrysanthemum Throne. We've got words like Kami. We've got words like Enna, which is referenced to like... Could be many different things in godlike. We've got this guy with the chakra diagram. We've got the Varse, which is like some kind of an idol thing.
Beams of lightning coming from the sky.
I didn't mention this before, but there was sort of like there's a stone head in the upper yard that looks like sort of a vague reference to like a Buddha statue with like a lotus on the forehead. So this is just really like a pastiche of just different touch tones from different faiths.
Yeah,
and I'm very
just mashed together up here in the sky.
We've got the Cupid army going on here, and I'm excited to see like just more of that. I like religious imagery as interpreted through works of fiction.
Oh yeah,
that's why I like Evangelion so much.
I have a question for you all.
Okay.
Based on what you saw on Angel Beach, what the fuck is this jungle doing here?
How's it doing that?
It ain't made of clouds.
Something must be holding it up, I guess.
A piece of earth. Maybe earth used to be in the sky and then it fell down, except for this piece.
Weird stuff happening in the sky sometimes was an X mark.
We're getting into it now, aren't we?
You sure are, huh?
Maybe it could be something to do with, like, the sea prism something stone?
Sea prism stone. Contains the essence of the sea, is what Smokers told us, right?
Yeah. Though they don't fully understand it.
Nope.
Keratin. Has something to do with keratin.
Sure.
God, what was that bit?
Usopp used to play with it a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
So what was that? Apparently. What?
Ah, yes, keratin.
When I was young.
My salad days of keratin. Any other thoughts for this volume?
There's a lot of shots of Oda doing one of my favorite things that he does with the super duper dramatic lighting and like the heavy shadows over people's faces due to either the god beams or just being dramatic.
Yeah,
we get a lot of that in this volume.
A lot of different styles and like shading and lighting. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm into it. I also love everybody's new fashions.
Yeah,
it's beach episode fashion.
Nothing but bangers all around.
It's beach episode fashion, but for like a whole arc.
Yeah.
it's not just beach episode stuff.
Like Zoro in a tank top, weirdly love it.
Yeah.
He looked super hot in that, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
not gonna lie to the children on this day.
that's an aspect, like, starting in Alabasta and now going forward, is that every time there's a new arc, he just takes that as an opportunity for everybody to change their clothes.
Sure. Yeah, we got cool, you know, we got fun desert outfits last time.
And now we have jungle adventure outfits.
Yeah, I do appreciate with One Piece, you can always tell what arc you're in by the clothes they're wearing.
Also, parentheses for any new arc is, what are you going to put Nami in this time, Oda? What strappy number do you have her?
Hey, he gave her a shirt back this time.
Yeah,
for how long, Tyler? For how long?
For how long, indeed. How about some X marks?
Do less.
Surely there's only a handful this time.
Yeah, not as many as last time, but there's a few.
Dude, that's a low bar. Or a high bar? Move on.
King Dalton.
Oh.
Okay.
I like that.
If our will is strong, we'll meet them again.
That's what Blackbeard said.
X-Tolls. Jason was joking, but invasive species.
Mm.
Love when a joke becomes an expert. Mm-hmm.
It's a jest mark.
Pyroblowin.
That's what it was called.
Tone dials are mostly for recording music.
Mostly.
Mm. Vars. Usopp has to keep pointing out that he is not a carpenter.
We really need a carpenter, huh?
It is becoming an issue. The fact that there is a sacrificial altar, and also that it's 1,000 years old.
How far are we on the timeline now?
Well, Noland was 400 years ago.
Oh, so we're older than Noland. This is the farthest back we've gone?
This is now the farthest back, is this altar existing.
Oh.
Other than the BC stuff from Alabasta.
Okay, so would this still be AD?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know. I don't actually know where the changeover date is, but I know some important dates and where they are on the timeline.
I assume it's at 0 or 1, maybe.
Sure. Mantra.
Hmm.
And impact.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Do we want to include the one that we accidentally stumbled on before we started recording?
I forgot it.
Jason accidentally, to his detriment...
This happens so much.
alluded to Slim Shady. And that is unfortunately for Jason, an X mark in One Piece.
I hate it.
Jason.
Yeah?
Do you have a star chart for us?
I sure do. And this is going to be fun. This is the first time in piecemeal history, though certainly not in anime podcast recap history, of a double horoscope tonight.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Two people with the same sign. Monkey D. Luffy with a May 5th birthday.
Oh.
And Conus with a May 20th birthday.
Oh.
Making them both Tauruses. Tauruses.
Taurii.
Taurii.
I hear Taurians.
That makes
sometimes.
Makes that bull boat very funny.
That's why I loved it.
Oh, you're right. Shit.
Oh my god.
Just felt a kinship with that.
So this is for both of them. Let's see if it applies to either of them. Luffy, Conus, here's what the stars have to say about you this week. Tension is building today that may wreak havoc with your harmonious nature.
Thank you all for listening.
No, there's more! There's more!
I appreciate everyone who tunes into this show.
Give us a 5-star rating, please, on iTunes.
Christia.
The key for you now is to see the opportunity instead of the conflict in each situation. This is a good time to gain a greater perspective on certain things. A bit of internal transformation may take place when you see things from the other side of the fence.
Thank you all for listening. Again, I appreciate everyone who tunes into this show every week with us.
The Jason stars got giggling. You fucked up this week, Tyler.
Yeah, Jason is still giggling.
Man, I I thought I hit Jason with that Slim Shady, but he hit me right back.
Rough counter.
Matt, where can our Nakama find you on the Grand Online? Though technically, I guess we're not on it anymore. We're above it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
We're in Grand Line airspace.
Yeah.
Sky-fi?
Sky-fi. Okay.
What? Yeah, where can our Nakama find you on the Sky-fi?
Well,
oh my god. It took me until second one to get it.
This arc only.
If you feel so inclined, you can find me on Twitter and twitch.tv under the username DefineProg. That's DefineProg. You can catch me doing my zombie VTuber thing.
And Jason.
Yo, you can find me at twitch.tv/jcalves, JAYCALVES. I try to stream every week. Been on a bit of a break, but I'll try and be back soon. Usually you can find me every Wednesday evening. But you can just kind of find me wherever. And JCabs is also just where you'll usually find my socials, Twitter, Insta, all that stuff.
Melissa?
Hey. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch as Kristaya, K-R-I-S-T-A-I-A. I tend to stream on Twitch video games and art stuff, usually in the evenings, Eastern time.
And Dave.
I am Scythe, P-S-Y-T-H-E, on Archive of Our Own. I rarely write fanfiction.
You can follow this show on Twitter at MealPeace, where you can send emails with comments, questions, and concerns to piecemealpodcast@gmail.com. And I would also appreciate it if you would rate and review this show on your podcast service of choice and give it a 5-star rating so that all the One Piece fans of the world can find it. And why wouldn't they want to after listening to this episode? The quality content that we provide.
Suffer with us.
This has been Piecemeal. Keep dreaming.